away the guns.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do. I would take away the guns. This is Carol here with Arts Live and Local, and I am so glad that we are all live, and we're local, and we're worldwide. But there are people who are dead because of those guns. And there are people in this country who think it's okay. It's okay to shoot and kill with an AK-47 when you're underage and in a different state and have no right to be there. Folks, we need to make some changes. Okay, that's that soapbox. Now the good soapbox is the arts. Arts Live and Local. Thank goodness for the arts and the artists who create for all of us to heal this world. It was pretty upsetting to me to hear that judgment this morning. But I'm glad to say that we've got a very full show. And first, I just want to wish a happy birthday to Anaïs Holen, and to Kathy Patnott, Leah Goodstein, Lulu Ossie, Gail Starr, Rex, and Ed O. And healing, special healing for Linda and Lori and Debbie and Caroline, and to Sharon and Margaret. And a happy anniversary to Margit and John. And now we're going to celebrate with some music with my first guest, and that would be none other than Corey Peterson. Hi, Corey.
Hey, how you doing, Carol?
Well, other than being kind of shook up by the news, I'm well, and I'm very glad you're here.
Well, I appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here on the radio, and I'm glad you're in this community because you sure know how to make things happen. We are talking right now about a concert that is tonight at St. Catherine's Episcopal Church down Nehalem Way on Highway 101. And I think it's going to be the same concert, am I right?
No, Sunday? No, you're correct.
Mm-hmm. On Sunday, right here in Astoria at the Charlene Larson Center for the Performing Arts, a.k.a. the PAC. Tonight is 7 o'clock. Sunday is 2 p.m. And that is the North Coast Chamber Orchestra. Yes?
Yes, correct. And it's Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Oh, 3? Uh-oh. Something I read said 2, so I'm glad I said it out loud and you corrected me. Okay. So, Corey, first of all, tell us, what is the NCCO?
Okay, so NCCO is the North Coast Chamber Orchestra, and that's actually part of it is part of the North Oregon Coast Symphony. And as years ago, we have changed it as we changed boards and conductors years ago. It had kind of dropped in attendance in terms of a lot of musicians were coming from Portland and whatnot. And so it was changing. It was just changing into a different ensemble at the time. And so quite some time ago, it became known as the North Coast Chamber Orchestra, with the hopes that over the years that we'll grow into a full-fledged symphony orchestra again at some point. And we were doing fairly well, and then COVID hit.
Oh, boy.
and shut us down. But, we're back up and running for the first time since that, and very ecstatic about it.
So is this your first concert in, 18 months or something?
Yeah, it'll mark 20 months.
20 months?
We've been in front of anybody.
Holy cow. So how does everybody stay in shape and practice, et cetera? What did you do to get to today?
That's a hard one. I know when the pandemic first hit, being in school districts, we had a lot of different scenarios that we had to use with the kids and the students that we had in terms of trying to keep them playing without actually having them in the building. And so I utilized a lot of those tactics with the community orchestras that I run. And so we would do things such as play-along series online where we would put out music for everybody if they're members of the orchestra, and they would see conducting videos that I would rehearse or privately record sections of it in my house here and send it out to everybody. So they could practice at home. We've done some virtual things where we've pieced things together for them to practice. And we've also done get-togethers where we would rehearse and then wear masks and gather once or twice for a brief amount of time in small little groups, very small groups. And we record separately and piece sections of music together that way. And that's kind of how we kept together and just keeping everyone, try to motivate them with exercises and other things to keep their embouchures and their arms and their heads all right. into tune.
Right. So in fact, your teaching experience, because you're still out at the Jewel School, is that correct?
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
And did you teach most of last year, all of last year? How did that work out?
Yeah, we were, Jewel was one of the very few that taught the entire year. And so I was able to teach music for my kids the whole year, although all my ensembles were cohorted in quarters. So a high school band of like 21 for me out there was four. And it was tough. But we have visions and dreams and not to let it die. And so we were piecing concerts and had Justin Grafton come out and do some videos with us for Veterans Day and holiday stuff. And
wonderful.
We're back this year full-time and bigger than we were when we entered into the pandemic.
Good for you. Thank you so much for keeping the kids going as well as the adults. So what's this concert? I think it has a name, Minor Alterations. What's that?
That's kind of a... It's maybe not what people may think in terms of music. It is more or less a joke, per se, where due to the pandemic, we've had to alter quite a few things, but albeit, many things are minor in nature. So that includes the type of music we perform based on the instrumentation versus some of the music we had to change a little bit just to make it work with what we have. Mm-hmm. And I thought on top of that, we've been... everyone's been so serious, and you said it earlier about the world is a different place than it was 20 months ago, and even then I thought it was moving there, and it's gone even further than I thought it would be going at this point. So we wanted some lighthearted stuff, so we picked some music that is beautiful, but some other pieces interspersed in between that are flat-out joking pieces. They're silly pieces that are just fun. One of them is our Plague Star piece here that we're playing by Mozart, which is a musical joke. It's 20 minutes of him making as many compositional errors on purpose, just to kind of make some slapstick of those composers back in his time that he just did not appreciate the work that they're putting out.
That's great. Now, if a person is not as strong on classical music, will they still get the jokes?
Yeah, I think they will to some extent. We have... In the program, we have our regular program notes, but then I put together a nice front and back page sheet that explains in one beautiful paragraph here about kind of the silliness of it all. And then out of all four movements, I dissected in each movement kind of the things to listen for as you're listening to the piece of music. And it pretty clearly spells it out if you don't have a whole lot of knowledge about music theory and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all in there.
Wow. How many folks do you have playing at this point?
Currently we're at about 14.
Okay. So I'm not familiar with St. Catherine's Episcopal Church, but I understand they have good acoustics. And
beautiful.
So that is tonight at 7. And then on Sunday, right here in Astoria, 16th and Franklin, at the Larson Center/the PAC at 3 p.m., for the concert, and there will be masks are required by the audience.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. I'm not sure about vaccination. I didn't check on that. Do you know?
My belief is for both concerts, vaccinations are required along with masks.
Okay. So I love it. Classical intrigue and humor. minor alterations. Okay, now you, as long as I've got you here, let's give people a heads up what's coming up at the Liberty on the 10th and 11th of December, because as much as it sounds ridiculous, it's right around the corner.
So. No, it is. So the other ensemble that I run also is called the Columbia River Symphony, and that's been on hiatus for 20 months as well. And every year prior to the pandemic, we had put together a large holiday concert for everybody in the community just to celebrate the holidays and the chance to get together. And ironically, the title of the concert this year is called Together.
Oh, wow.
And it's basically what we're able to offer this year. It's not your traditional concert that you've come to expect all the time from the Columbia River Symphony for the holiday season. With the pandemic in place, we're about 45 or 50 on normal years, but currently we're sitting about 30, 35.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no choir this year. Usually the Warrenton School District Choir joins us.
Mm-hmm.
But with required vaccinations and whatnot, it's just going to be rather small. It's going to be an hour-long, no intermission concert. Mm-hmm. But it is offered two concerts just because we have done really well at these concerts, and people tend to enjoy them, and they're going to be heartfelt. The beauty of all the holiday music that you can imagine that we have, and of course we've got your lighthearted stuff. It's just supposed to be meant to bring everyone together. And part of the reason for the title Together is we've all gone through everything together. I mean, if you think about the last 20 months, you can name anything. I mean, the title song you guys brought in the show with, which was Maybe, blah, 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 whatever it was. And I'm thinking the same thing with the word together. You can name a whole list of things that we've all done as a community and beyond together, where we're at this point.
I bet the musicians are very happy to be back in the ensemble playing together.
We've had tears. I won't lie, myself included. A couple of times, it gets a little over emotional sometimes about. It's an emotional world right now, so it's been a blast, and it's talk about family, getting together, and doing something everybody loves. And
well, since you mentioned family and together, may I head to a bit of a personal. First of all, your wife, Angela Calvin Peterson, is also a music teacher. Has she been able to teach because you now have two children? And I'm wondering whether those kids got kind of used to having their parents around, and how does that work?
Yeah, most people know us as being a little bit busy sometimes, and that hasn't changed. Our poor kids, they're everywhere with us, and Angela plays in the Columbia River Symphony as much as she can. She teaches private lessons here at our house, and she's running around with the girls half the time, and I'm working late in Jewel, so I'm still coming home, and Our family time is usually a couple hours in the evening, and we're running around tickling each other, having good times, laughing, and making up for it on the weekends as best we can here.
Yeah, nice. Okay, well, Corey Peterson, thank you so much for keeping the light of music going these last almost 2 years. And again, tonight at St. Catherine's Episcopal Church, that's 36335 North Highway 101, near Nehalem and Manzanita, 7 p.m. And Sunday, 3 p.m. at the Larson Center of the Performing Arts, 16th and Franklin in Astoria, the North Coast Chamber Orchestra with minor alterations, a lot of fun. it definitely sounds intriguing. Thanks again, Corey. Thanks for being here.
Carol, thank you very much, sir.
Okay. And we lost a terrific musician, lyricist, pianist, humorist. Dave Frischberg died at the age of 88 this past week. He lived in Portland these many years. And he'd been to Astoria a number of times. Thanks, Retta Christie and Jim Goodwin, of blessed memory, and made some terrific music. So We have four of his albums, plus we've got Aretha Christie with Frischberg. But I'm going to just go ahead and play his most famous song for those of you who are going, who? Maybe you'll recognize this.
Yesterday I owe it all to you. Bernie tells me what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Bernie lays it
My attorney,
line.
Bernie. You know, it's amazing how, what do they call them, earworms or something. Some songs get stuck in you. And I started singing that song on just this past Tuesday for Susan upstairs, apropos of something we were talking about. And then I got the news that the wonderful Dave Frischberg had left us. But he sure left us a tremendous amount of music. And he, as I say, also played as a sideman, for example, with Aretha Christie right here in Astoria. So my next guest, well, I don't know. She might have had some goings on with attorneys. I know she's had goings on with some of the darker sides of life. But these days, she is an author, a writer, a mentor, and that would be Jennifer Greer. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Carol. Thank you so much for having me on the radio show.
You bet. Well, Jennifer was here last January because she... Was that when you came out with A Desperate Place?
It was published in August of 2020.
Okay. And you presented it in Cannon Beach, I think. So we talked a little bit about it. And now you're moving from there on. But first, let me just mention that Jennifer sounds like a lovely person. I'm sure she is. I haven't met her in person yet. However, she's also got quite a background. She was a crime reporter for the Fresno Bee, traveled in Russia, in London, I'm glad to say in art and literature, and then in Croatia, in the war regions, and has an award-winning article on women and children refugees, which I hope to read at some point. But she's taken some of those experiences and translated them into her writing. So mystery thrillers, is that kind of the genre that you...
Yes, yeah. That's exactly. Mystery suspense thriller.
Oh, okay. We got the word suspense in there. That makes it even more challenging for some of us. Okay. I told Jennifer I was up front. I'm one of those scaredy cats. I don't usually can't handle that scary stuff. Too much for me. But A Desperate Place did get fantastic reviews, including from Kirkus, top 2020 book, one of the top 2020 books of the year. And I'm wondering, at this point, you've put together a group, the North Coast Mystery Writers Group. What's the idea there?
Well, you know, we don't have a group here that represents mystery suspense thriller writers. And I thought, you know, the hardest part of being a writer is really just not getting discouraged, because it's usually a long road for writers from the time that they start writing to they eventually get published.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a long, lonely road for a lot of people. So I thought, what better way to have a great support group with other people in the same genre? And I've had, we've met one time so far, and we've got 8 people already interested. So I'm really excited about it.
Wow. And you're still open to more people?
Oh, yeah, sure. I will be sending out Zoom meetings, and eventually we'll be meeting at the Manzanita Library when things calm down a little bit with COVID. But right now we're doing Zoom meetings, and it's really more about, it's not a critique group. It's more about giving support and encouragement and talking about what's going on in the writing industry and maybe a little brainstorming. So I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Are most of the people already published authors, or
No.
Okay.
There is no criteria to be in this group except an interest in writing mystery suspense thriller. There are three published people, and the rest are not published yet. But a few of them have books finished. Some of them don't. So any level of writing.
How does someone get hold of you if they want to know more or apply?
Yeah,
to...
my website is jennifergreer.net. And if you go on there, you can look under writers.
Okay.
And it gives a full explanation, and you can just send in your email with that, and then you're connected.
Okay, so I'm wondering, is this going to be, is this group, well, it's on Zoom, so it's a little bit different still, but considering the content, are most of the people there, is that their main interest in writing, or are there people, including yourself, for whom this is one of many areas that you're interested in?
Yes, that's exactly correct. I actually have another book I'm working on that is more of a, it's outside the genre. It doesn't really suit it that much, but there are some that are writing memoirs, and then there are some also writing, or they're not writing mystery, they're writing mainstream, but they are also writing mystery. So it doesn't have to be an exclusive.
Okay. So this book, A Desperate Place, one of the things that was intriguing was that you have two main, correct me if I'm wrong, two main characters, both women, and one is a journalist, and the other is a medical detective. So I can imagine that you drew on your own experiences for the journalist. What about the medical aspect? Have you had experience, or where did that come from?
Well, due to the nature of the book that I was writing, there was a lot of medical aspects to it. I needed a medical examiner, so I added the medical examiner and made her best friends with the journalist, and they both work on these stories, which normally, you know, those are opposing jobs. So the medical examiner I interviewed in Medford, wonderful, wonderful guy, and it just turned into this fabulous character.
What do you mean they were usually opposing?
Well, reporters and detectives don't usually mix company.
Ah, right. The detectives don't want the reporters around.
Exactly.
And the reporters
are best friends.
And, well, that was a sneaky way to get in there. That's good. So is it as intense as the work that you did as a crime reporter? Was that as intense as what you've got in the book?
Yes and no. I mean, sometimes it's not. You can, you know, I went weeks, but Fresno at the time when I was working there was like the crime capital. It's fifth in the nation for murder.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, I used to call it Gotham City. So I got lots of exposure. So it actually was great for as far as writing fiction.
Ha, interesting. Are you doing any journalism now?
I'm not. I've thought about it, but I've got the sequel I'm working on to A Desperate Place on a standalone that my agent's waiting for. I'm almost finished with that one. And then, you know, marketing for A Desperate Place. It actually, you know, most books sell about 200 books the first year for a new author.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't sell that many. And I got a little over 10,000.
Yeah,
and,
a lot. You know,
very successful, so I'm just thrilled.
Why? You have a good attorney like Bernie, maybe.
I worked hard at the marketing aspects of it, and I learned what works and what doesn't work. And that's part of what I share in my group. You know, I've done some tried and true things, and so I offer all the information that I possibly can to help other authors.
Okay. Now, since I didn't read the book, I admit it sounded beyond me because, well, you know, scary, and also you stuck that word suspense. Oh, forget about it. You know, my stomach goes into knots trying to figure out what's coming. So how does it work with a sequel? First of all, did you plan to make this into a series when you were writing it, or did you finish the book and say, oh, I got to keep going?
No, I actually didn't. Initially, it was just going to be a standalone. But then when I added the second character, I really liked the way that they work together, the dynamic of the two personalities. And it's a lot like, for like suspense or thriller readers, they know who Tess Gerritsen's Rizzoli and Isles series is. And it's very much like that. And so I think it just really plays out well.
So we're going to hear more from Whit McKenna, the journalist, and Katie Riggs, the medical detective. And if this is a spoiler alert, tell me, do they remain friends?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, these are two very strong, independent women that are very supportive of one another.
And where does this one, the first one took place in Medford, this one too?
Yes, the sequel, A Desperate Place has a sequel called A Twisted Place, and that also takes place in Medford. However, I have a standalone called Swept Away that is based in Cannon Beach that's coming up.
What is it called, Swept Away?
That's the working title. It's called Swept Away. I'm almost done with it, and my agent's waiting for it, and we'll see how that one goes, but it's based in Cannon Beach. So I'm really excited about that one, too.
Is there anything you want to tell us about that, or are you holding out? First of all,
no.
is it a thriller?
A little synopsis.
Okay.
It's about a Dr. Elizabeth Morgan, who is trying to find meaning in her life after her twin toddlers are drowned in a sneaker wave that swept them out to sea.
Yeah.
And she's rescued from a cliff by a guy named Grayson Elliott, who is a rich philanthropist and happens to be a serial killer, but he also falls madly in love with her. So there's these twists, and then her brother is the detective in Cannon Beach, and a body washes up on shore, and it links to a group of missing women called the Lonely Hearts Club. So it's got lots of twists and turns.
And the first A Desperate Place also had dead bodies. Of course, I guess
it's an unfortunate happenstance with mysteries.
That's what happens there. Okay, so we're going to be able to look forward to Swept Away from Cannon Beach and A Twisted Place, the sequel to A Desperate Place. I don't name anything but local bookstores.
Yes,
independent
and all of the local bookstores carry A Desperate Place.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you. So folks can find your books and also can find your North Coast Mystery Writers Group, jennifergreer.net. That's G-R-E-E-R net. Jennifer, thank you so much and best of luck on all your books. I don't think you need luck. It sounds like you're on a roll. And is there somewhere where someone could read your article on the women and children refugees, which is more along my line of reading? Is that
You know what? I don't have it out available, but now that you say that, I think I'll post it on my website.
Good. Because it's very relevant. It may not be from Croatia, but the topic is extremely relevant right now, too.
Oh, sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah, great. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Congratulations on all the good works. And you live in the Manzanita area?
Yes, I live in Manzanita.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Close enough. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Carol.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And speaking of thanks, I've got some thanks going out. And stay tuned, we've got a couple more guests. And with the sun and the rain, I hope also, who have I got on the line now? Is this Susan? Hello? Anybody on the line? Susan? Uh-oh. Well, who's on the telephone with me? Hello?
This is Susan Bartline. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Sorry, there's terrible signal in the school. I apologize.
Okay. Thanks, Susan. I thought we just I was just speaking to a mystery thriller suspense writer, and I thought, who knows? Maybe, you know, something's going on there. Susan, how do you pronounce your last name?
Bartline.
Bartline. Okay, it's spelled B-A-E-R-T. Bartline is the Seaside High School drama teacher and possibly other things. What else do you teach, other subjects there?
Yes, I'm the English department chair and one of the two drama teachers at Seaside High School.
Oh, two. Wow.
Well, we share the position. I'm not musical. So,
oh, I see.
Miss Ann Susie is the musical director, and I do the fall play.
Okay, well, we got lucky. We got lucky because Seaside High School, actually, you opened last night. Is that correct?
Last night was actually the second performance. We opened on Tuesday, and then there was a band concert Wednesday, so we kind of had a soft opening, you know.
Holy cow.
And so then we have a performance tonight and tomorrow night as well.
Okay, Seaside High School is a busy place, folks. They are putting on Treasure Island, and this is live at the school. So how's everything going? I didn't realize it was such a convoluted schedule.
Yes. Well, we weren't sure if we'd be able to do a live performance this fall, just with the,
right,
you know, with coronavirus and everything. So after March 2020, when we had to stop doing one act that we had paid for licensing rights for, I decided to do a play that was in the public domain, so that we didn't lose money if we had to,
right,
you know, where we self-fund our program, you know, so it's always tricky to make sure we can afford our costumes and everything, you know. So, you know, I used a Lux Radio Theater radio play script, and so I figured if we had to go not in person, a radio play would still work because we could do it on Zoom or we could do it recorded. And since we got to stay in person and we actually get to, the audience has to wear masks, but we are able to perform with our masks off with the current regulations. We are able to actually act it out. So it is I'm calling it a visual radio play because we are acting like it's a regular play, but the script is written for the radio. So for the Lux Radio Theater 1951 performance. And so we've adapted the script a little bit to work for our needs, but the kids do a really great job. They're really cute.
How many students do you have involved and what grades?
Yes, so we have 21 students in the play with cast and crew, 9 through 12, although 14 of the 21 are seniors. So
wow.
It's a very senior-heavy play.
Oh, I bet the seniors are thrilled to be able to do one, at least their last year.
Yes, they've missed it a lot. We did a Zoom play last year, but that's not the same, you know.
No.
So,
especially for kids who have been doing theater and love theater, I constantly hear from them that the main draw is the camaraderie, the theater
for sure.
Family. So it doesn't work quite that well with Zoom, but still.
Yes, so they're super excited to be able to do cast bonding and just spend time together. You know, we did all our practices masked, but they don't care. They're happily wearing their masks.
Yes.
You know, like that's not an issue for them.
Right.
They have been great and they've worked really hard. And we kind of took the radio ads from the original script that were sexist because they were from the 1950s, and we've changed them to be local ads instead from our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a little performance beginning by two of our seniors of Who's on First by Abbott.
Oh, yes.
So we have kind of a variety show Treasure Island situation.
Okay, now this show is at 7, I believe, tonight and tomorrow.
The doors open at 6:30 at the new secondary school off Wahana, and then it starts at 7. And it's under 2 hours, so it's, you know, you're not having to stay up too late and still enjoy some live theater.
And is it, is there an intermission?
Yes, it's a 10-minute intermission. We'll have some limited concessions, water, candy, culinary-made cookies from our culinary program, which are delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, time for snacks.
Yeah.
So it's in the cafeteria at the secondary school.
That's where we're going. In the cafeteria is where the performance is?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So how about for you? We know the students are thrilled to be back on stage. How is it for you compared to last year?
Oh, it's so much better. I'm never doing a Zoom play again.
Wait, I'm knocking on wood. Famous last words,
yes.
Girl.
Yes. I know. Yeah. I'll knock on wood as well. But they were great, and it was much better than nothing at all, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just not the same, and it's hard to practice when, you know, we're all in different spaces. And so I can't really give a lot of direction when it's like, well, angle your camera a different way.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So it's just really nice to be back with them. And,
yeah,
you know, they're just my theater children, and I love them. And so it's nice to just be there with them and enjoy their sassy attitudes and their creativity. And I will say my favorite thing is that I think this is a selling point. Other people may not. But it's Treasure Island is a British play. You know, Robert Stevenson was from England. And so it takes place off the Bristol Channel in England is where the setting is. And I told the students that they did not have to have accents because I'm not trained to train them in accents.
Right.
But almost all of them are doing an accent.
Oh, my.
And they're super cute accents. So none of them are Bristol accents, but they're adorable.
No. Well, on behalf of our community, our greater community, I want to thank you for hanging in there with the kids all year, despite the craziness. And in addition to your regular teaching, because after all, this is the arts show, and this is what I believe helps way more than so much else to get through and to enhance life. So thank you for being there for the students and obviously for loving them and keeping them going. And I hope they all break their legs. Well, not really, but.
Yes, we want them to break their legs. We want broken legs.
No. Okay.
Well, thank you for promoting the arts and
have
a great weekend and come see the show.
Okay. Thank you so much, Susan Barton.
Thanks so much.
From Seaside High School with Treasure Island, Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island. It is tonight and tomorrow night. Doors open 6:30. Play is at 7 in Wahana, the new high school, in the cafeteria. And it should be a lot of fun. And here's Jim Page. This is relating back to what's going on in our country.
He walked into the cafeteria. He had a gun in his hand. He walked in like a time bomb, triggered to command. He fired 41 rounds. That's how the story gets told. He killed his mother and his father too. He was 15 years old. The doctors, they pondered. They puzzled and schemed. They analyzed his body language and his camouflage dreams. They said his town was so normal, his street was just fine. All those unanswered questions, well, they're the most dangerous kind. River of rage. River of rage. Blame it on the music, it's easy to do. Blame it on the internet, and blame the TV too. Blame it on the devil, 'cause that's what he's for. But all the blame in the world won't put life back into those bodies on the floor. It's a trickery world. It's all mirrors and smoke. And the promises that they made to you, well, they were just a joke. And when you find out you've been lied to, and the lie wasn't true, You're gonna have to get mad at somebody, but you just don't know who. River of Rage.
Yeah. River of Rage, Jim Page. And it seems there's way too much of that going on. But the good news is there's also a tremendous amount of healing arts going on as well. And my last guest for today is someone probably well known for many things, including being a wonderful guest here on Arts Live and Local, because her life is so diverse. Betty Lou Krause is here with me. Hi, Betty Lou.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
I am good. And I am glad you are here. I'm glad for this show. I'm glad to be able to share with our community that the arts, creative energy goes on and can has to be able to carry us while we do the work to make this a better world. So you are one who does that in so many ways. Today you are here in your visual artist hat. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. So the Peninsula Arts Association Fall Studio Tour is coming not this weekend, but next weekend. Is that right? The 26th and 27th?
That's right. The Friday and Saturday from 10 to 4.
10 to 4 each day?
Yes.
Okay. So, what is the Peninsula Arts Association, and where is the studio tour happening and everything else? Tell us.
Okay. Well, if we don't count last year, which would have been the 13th, and I think we'll skip that, this would be the 14th annual studio tour up here on the peninsula. So over on the Washington side, there are studios open from Ilwaco through Seaview and Long Beach and Ocean Park, all the way up north of Oysterville at Harmony Soapworks. We've got 15 venues and 26 artists participating. We've got new folks, and we've got people who've been here for every year since we started.
So do you usually have it this late in the fall?
We always do. This has been the Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay.
It's been a really good weekend for us to do this.
Okay. I was wondering because of the weather.
Well, yeah, the weather's a little iffy, but we do get a lot of visitors because we have so many vacation homes here.
Ah,
so,
yes. Right. So they come for Thanksgiving because
come
it's for a
fort. Family Thanksgivings
right.
and get-togethers. And so it's a really family-friendly great way to just explore the peninsula a little bit and meet some of the artists and do a little early Christmas shopping. Well, I guess it's not early anymore, but yeah.
Well, and it's almost exactly Hanukkah shopping because that starts the very next day. So the night of the 28th. So how do people negotiate? Where do they find the maps? What's involved? How does it work?
Well, we have a beautiful map done, and it's available at any of the studios, but there are lots of them at the galleries and visitor centers. So you've got Bold Gallery in Long Beach, Bay Avenue Gallery in Ocean Park, and then there's Visitors Bureau in Seaview when you first come on the peninsula. The southernmost one is Louisa Mack in Ilwaco. So all of the artists have some of the maps. Every hotel has the maps. We printed a lot of them.
Okay. And people just head on over there, find a map,
yes.
and start moving. And what do they find in the venues? Are there groups of people? And, in past years, there were always refreshments and all kinds of things. I don't know how things are working these days.
We leave some of that up to the individual artists. I certainly am requiring masks in my studio because it's quite a small space.
Yes.
But we did do a summer studio tour, and it wasn't crowded, and it wasn't a problem, and everyone was just wonderful about masking. So we did do sometimes very elaborate refreshments on the tours, and we leave that up to the individual now as well.
Okay. Tell me again, how many venues and how many artists?
There are 15 venues and 26 artists participating, and we have signs, these black and red signs that say PAA Studio Tour. So everyone has arrows pointing to their studios.
Nice.
Even though we're scattered all over, it's pretty easy to find them.
Yeah, well, as I say each year, everybody but you, because your house is on this little road, and it's like, you definitely want a map to find it. Although maybe GPS goes there. I don't know, because I don't have that.
Well, that works really well now. If you get a map, which you can get on the PAA Facebook page or at beachartist.org, then all the addresses are on there, and you can just Google it all. And everybody's phone numbers are there, too, if you really get lost.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Beachartist.org. Okay.
Beachartist.org.
Singular artist. Excellent. Okay. How has the Peninsula Arts Association been around 14 years or longer, and you just started the tours, or what?
Way more than 40 years.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. We're probably close to 50 years as an organization. So, yes, we do. The PAA, in normal years, does a spring art show and a fall art show. And now we have a summer studio tour and a fall studio tour. We have a scholarship we give every year to a student that's interested in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a program that supports the schools, that supplies art supplies to schools.
I love that. I love that the artists around here make sure to pass this on to the next generations and support the community. Excellent. So, Betty Lou, tell us what you've got in your studio, for example.
Oh, well, I'm in my studio right now.
Aha.
Framing some new paintings, and I make prints of my paintings. I paint nature. I love trees, and I love to be in the woods, and I have paintings of trees and cranberry fields and more trees. And
let me just mention that one of Betty Lou's hats, in addition to being a visual artist and a musician, one of the oyster crackers you've heard of. She also is a naturalist, but I believe that was mostly out to sea rather than in the woods.
Right, but of course, we landed in our wonderful Zodiacs and took people on hikes ashore in very, very wild places out with bears.
Okay.
In Alaska, and salmon and big trees. It was just grand.
Okay, well then it works together. How about those wonderful tree ornaments that you've made in the past?
I do have some new ornaments. I just picked up a few today. There was a supply problem with the high school, but they got the blanks in today. So I'm going to have all my ornaments by Thanksgiving. So, yeah, ornaments with trees and ornaments with clamors.
Great.
And I also have seascapes and
nice
clamming image. There's also, just such a variety of art and jewelry. We have Harmony Soap Works, beautiful handmade soaps. We've got a metal worker. We've got Jim Unwin with his wood carvings. Some other painters of all varieties. There's at least three or four clay artists.
Oh, wow. And you mentioned Louisa Mack with the jewelry also?
She's a remarkable, wonderful jeweler down in Iwako.
Yeah.
Very, very trained and skilled, pretty exquisite stuff.
German-trained silver and gold, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it is it's quite a scene. Well, I'm glad to hear that one can take a look at the map beforehand at beachartists.org. This is the Peninsula Arts Association Fall Studio Tour, and it is Friday and Saturday of this coming week, a week from today, the 26th and 27th from 10 till 4. Okay, I think we've got it all. And Betty Lou is, in addition to being one of the artists this year, she is the co-chair as well of the fall tour with Nancy Ilwood. So thank you so much, Betty Lou, for doing it and for joining me here on Arts Live and Local.
Thank you, Carol. It's always so wonderful to talk to you. Thanks for what you do here.
Okay, great. And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Okay, folks.
I get the a little blues bit of when it
Rhett Christie singing.
Blues I can't lose.
Doesn't sound very bluesy, but we can relate to getting the blues
each
in the rain. Dave Frischberg of Blessed Memory on the piano. Folks, don't forget that tonight is the NCCO at St. Catharines and Sunday at 3 at the Larson Center in Astoria. The Coaster is opening with the Christmas Carol, and that is the Coaster Theater Radio Hour, 7:30 p.m. Astoria High School is featuring Arsenic and Old Lace tonight and tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And Seaside, you heard, Friday and Saturday at 7. Saturday is the Southwester screen printing, and Sunday is Fort George. And that's it for me. Thanks for being here. A good Thanksgiving. And please, please do something about the guns. Thanks, folks.